Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol has defined the holiday for countless generations. It has inspired numerous film and theatrical adaptations, and its characters, from Scrooge to Tiny Tim, have become cultural touchstones. In the new book, The Further Adventures of Ebenezer Scrooge, Charlie Lovett picks up where Dickens left off and transports readers back to Victorian London and creates a perfect companion to the beloved classic. It is The Further Adventures of Ebenezer Scrooge, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Charlie Lovett to the roundtable. Good morning. How are you?
It's good to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. So what led you to do such a thing?
Well, I thought that Scrooge sort of got short shrift. You know, if you call your neighbor a Scrooge, you're not likely paying him a compliment. And yet, at the end of Dickens' book, Scrooge is a great guy. Dickens says he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. So I thought that the transformed Scrooge deserved a little bit of page time. So I pick up the story after he's had his famous transformation.
I have to admit, when I first saw this, I thought it was going to be a parody or a satire. But you take this very seriously, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certain elements of parody in a really strict sense, in that, especially in that opening passage, you know, in A Christmas Carol, it's the coldest day of the year. Scrooge is this very well-known miser who's a misanthrope and doesn't like anybody and is very grouchy. And in my book, it's the hottest day of the year, it's the longest day of the year, and Scrooge is going around wishing everybody a Merry Christmas, and he's getting on people's nerves almost as much, but just in a very different way. So I guess in that sense, there's an element of parody, but I really wanted to approach it by saying to myself, well, if Dickens actually wrote a sequel 20 years later, what might that have looked like and sounded like?
And why 20 years?
I wanted enough time to have passed that Scrooge had sort of developed a reputation and was kind of known around London. So I sort of had this theory that when we first meet Scrooge, he was a very old, grumpy 60-year-old, and that his youth, his inner youth, comes from this transformation that he has. And so now he's 80, but he's still, you know, pretty spry and able to go around London. And he's thought of as sort of the city eccentric, this man who celebrates Christmas on every day of the year, eats a Christmas pudding with his dinner every night, and is constantly, you know, wishing people Merry Christmas, and even in the middle of the summertime.
You go to great lengths to write in that Dickens style.
Yeah, as I said, I wanted it to feel like it had been written by Dickens. Sometimes the lengths that I go to include the length of, you know, even using some of Dickens' own words, sometimes from A Christmas Carol, but sometimes from other, perhaps less well-known sources. You know, he wrote so many of these little essays about life in London and about Christmas and other topics, it was easy to, if I needed a description of a certain building, or say a description of a Victorian Christmas tree, I just, you know, pulled a couple of sentences from an essay that he had written where he describes a Christmas tree, and by having those sort of anchor points, it made it easier for me to write the rest of the story in that same prose style.
So ultimately in this book, Scrooge is trying to convince everyone that this season of love and charity doesn't have to just be around the holidays.
Exactly. And some of the more familiar characters, Bob Cratchit and Scrooge's nephew Freddie, have over the years kind of fallen into this trap that a lot of us fall into, of simply being distracted by everyday life from the things which they know in their heart are really the most important things, you know, family and caring for other people. And he sort of opens their eyes to the fact that they have kind of fallen into that trap of letting the daily grind get in the way of the things that really matter.
You are a former antiquarian bookseller and a book collector. So does that lead into this love of old literature and wanting to bring it to new life?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, my first two novels very much featured old books as almost as characters. You know, The Bookman's Tale, which centered around sort of a Shakespearean mystery, and First Impressions, in which Jane Austen was one of the characters. So I do like to go back into that world of old books and the people who created them, and also show how not just the stories and the characters and the authors, but even the physical books themselves can connect people across the generations.
When you take on a project like this, how many times do you have to read the original?
You know, when I was working on this project, I literally had the original at my elbow the whole time. And yeah. part of that was because I really wanted to maintain the structure that Dickens created in the original. He wrote the original book in five, what he called staves. I'm not sure why he called them staves. They seem sort of like chapters to me, but I thought if that's a good enough word for him, it's a good enough word for me.
You
know, as I sat down to write each of those staves, I would reread his, you know, two or three times to kind of get the flow of it, get the language of it, and also look for any details that I wanted to make reference to, whether it was, you know, the way that the Christmas spirits looked or, you know, places in London that they went. I wanted to have these little nice little touches where people who are familiar with the original might go, oh, I see what he did there. But if you're not as familiar with the original, you wouldn't necessarily be missing a piece of narrative, you know.
Is it fun to revisit the ghosts?
It is. And, you know, one of the ones that I really enjoyed revisiting was The Ghost of Christmas Present, because Dickens says of The Ghost of Christmas Present in 1843, he says that he had more than 1,800 brothers. So to me that meant, okay, well, each Christmas has a different one, which sort of makes sense. And I thought, well, that probably means that The Ghost of Christmas Present doesn't really come into being until after the previous Christmas season has ended. And so my book is set in June, so we decided to approach The Ghost of Christmas Present, both in the text and in the illustration, as sort of not being fully grown. He's sort of a jolly adolescent, you know. And, you know, he's still this great, huge character, but he's clean-shaven. You know, he hasn't grown the beard yet, and some of those other aspects of him, his personality, are a little bit more childlike. So that was really fun because he's really sort of a different kind of character than the original.
And yet you still get to use the word humbug.
Oh, yes. Yes. But it doesn't come from Ebenezer Scrooge.
Right.
because, yeah, this idea that he has that we should have charity and generosity the year round and have the Christmas spirit the year round does tend to grate on some of the people that he meets at the beginning of the book, in particular his bankers. Who meet him in the street to inform him that his charity has extended to the point of overdrawing his bank account yet again. This is something that they get sort of frustrated with. So he is dealing with some of the attitudes in other people that other people had to deal with in him 20 years earlier.
How much do we know of what Dickens wanted to accomplish with A Christmas Carol as far as advancing a concern that the holiday spirit was getting lost?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the sort of history of Christmas celebrations, and some people say, oh, Dickens invented modern Christmas celebration. That's not quite true. But a lot of the celebrations that had happened in the past had sort of been pushed down by the Puritans, who didn't really believe in celebrating holidays. And then at the same time, you had the Industrial Revolution with, you know, factory workers who were not being given time off of work for religious holidays. And so definitely it was a time when Christmas was starting to evolve, and Dickens wanted to sort of bring back some of those old traditions, and especially this idea of charity. And then also in the 1840s, you had an economic downturn that was meant really sort of bad news, especially for children in London, and that was something that he was also very concerned about pointing out. So you see in A Christmas Carol this shows up in a lot of Dickens' later writing too, this concern for social justice, I guess you would say, and looking out for other people. And he uses it to great effect, I think, in Scrooge's original transformation to sort of show people that they can make a difference in the lives of other people, even in tough times.
So let me essentially ask you the same question, which is, did you then have somewhat of a message that you wanted to convey as well?
Well, sure. I mean, I think the idea that the things that we think of, especially at Christmas time, are things that we can think of year-round. I mean, any nonprofit organization that is helping people who are less fortunate will tell you that, you know, it's much easier to raise money, to get food donated, to get volunteers to help out during the holidays than it is during May or June or September, you know. And so to sort of put forth the idea of, you know, those good feelings that you have about other people and wanting to help other people are not things that need to be limited to that little time frame between Thanksgiving and New Year's. They're things that we can be aware of and do all year round to make a difference in people's lives.
Does it help that you live part-time in England?
I think it does. You know, both of my other novels are set in England, and we live over there. We have a cottage over there that we spend about 6 to 8 weeks a year in, And I don't do a lot of writing over there, but I do a lot of reading and a lot of sort of soaking up the culture, the countryside, the architecture, the history, the art. And to me, it's a great sort of creative recharging post, if you will, that sort of makes me, when I get back here, I'm able to sort of take my mind and get into that kind of English mindset. And with Dickens, it also just had to do with reading a lot of Dickens, because he will put you in that mindset himself without you ever having to leave your desk.
Charlie Lovett is the author of the previous novel, the New York Times bestselling The Bookman's Tale, as well as First Impressions. The new book is The Further Adventures of Ebenezer Scrooge, and it is published by Viking. Charlie Lovett, thank you very much for sharing with us during this holiday season. Thank you very much, and travel safe and have a beautiful holiday yourself.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Right back to you. Again, the title of the new book is The Further Adventures of Ebenezer Scrooge. It is published by Viking, by Charlie Lovett. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.